Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Lori McGee, who's serving as our worship associate, our director of religious education, Karen Lapidus, and our music director, Hal Walker. Last night, we had our annual auction of goods and services. This is the single largest item in our budget, aside from the pledges from members and friends of the congregation. So it's a significant event for us every year. It takes a great many people to make it happen, and it was tremendously successful last night. Thanks to you, we raised $25,500, and that does not include the almost $4,000 that were contributed for our fund-a-need item. The fund-a-need item is to replace the roof on the Eldridge Annex, which we will continue to use even after we complete our building expansion for offices and meeting space. There are a few other repairs as well.
We all have difficult people in our lives. You know the ones. They test our patience, push our buttons, and constantly challenge our resolve. Through many, many conversations with Melissa, I have learned to call these people in my life extra grace people. These individuals generally require the use of all the skills I've learned through many years of counseling. One of these extra grace people is my grandmother. She has always been what you would call difficult. She has strained relationships with just about everyone she knows. Now, as an adult, I know that she lived her entire life with undiagnosed mental illness of some sort. That doesn't make it easier, but at least I know that that's what she was dealing with. And as is the case with someone who has lifelong issues, especially someone in your family that you are dealing with on a daily basis for your entire life, it's hard to find just one story to illustrate the issue and why she is so difficult. So after some conversations with my family, I remembered a circumstance. This happened just a few years ago. My partner and I decided to go see a movie on a Saturday night. It was date night. And during the time that we were at the movie, of course we had our cell phones off, my grandmother called me in a 45-minute span 57 times. So you can do the math on that one. And almost all of those were accompanied by some sort of voicemail. She didn't trust the technology. She didn't trust that I would get these voicemails over and over, so she kept leaving them. And they would get longer and longer and more hysterical because she couldn't get a hold of me. And the last few messages were, "I'm going to call the police. I can't find you. You must be dead." It just went on and on and on. So finally, when I called her back, I said, "You know, you really didn't need to do that." "Yes, I did. I thought something happened to you." And I said, "Graham, I'm 42 years old. I have grandchildren of my own. I have successfully lived my whole life up until this point, and I'm still alive. So I think that you have to remember that no news is good news, right? If you can't get a hold of me, no news is good news." Well, this wasn't acceptable to her, and, you know, it just went on from there. That's just one of the stories that I can think of that illustrate the kind of issues that she was dealing with. So where does the grace come in? There's actually a lesson to be learned here. Once I realized that I could step back from it and look at this in a bigger picture sort of way, I realized that there were some gifts that I received from her behavior, one of which was the ability to know and set boundaries. That was difficult for her. It was difficult for me. But I learned how to do it. And in doing that, I also learned some self-care, that I could put myself first and that was okay. And it also taught me a great deal about empathy and listening to others when they were relating stories about the difficult people in their lives and helping them know that they were not alone. Come, let us worship together.
Our story this morning is The Dervish in a Ditch, which is from the Sufi tradition. But let's talk first about what a dervish is so that we all are on the same page. A dervish is a member, a Muslim, who's a member of a religious order called the dervish. Usually they're Sufi Muslims. They take vows of poverty and austerity. And you may know the dervishes because of the dance that they do to achieve religious ecstasy, kind of a twirling, whirling dance. So this story is about a dervish. Once upon a time, in a land to the east, a dervish holy man and his student were walking from one village to the next. Suddenly, they saw a great, huge cloud of dust rising in the distance. They stood and stared at the grand carriage, pulled by six horses, approaching at a full gallop. Riding on top were two liveries dressed in red and each holding a rein. It was coming closer and louder and closer and louder. The dervish and the young student soon realized that the carriage was not down, let alone veer to the side to avoid. The carriage was coming at such a speed that they had to throw themselves from the road and jump into a ditch to save themselves. Covered with grass and dirt, the two men got up. They looked after the carriage as it sped away into the distance. The student was first to respond. He began to call out and curse the drivers. "Can't you see us walking here? What's the matter with you? I hope somebody runs you off the road someday." But the teacher ran ahead of the student and cupped his hands over his mouth and called to the carriage, "May all of your deepest desires be satisfied." And the student stared at the teacher and asked, "Why would you wish that their deepest desires be satisfied? Those men nearly killed us." And the old dervish replied, "Do you think all the desires are satisfied? If they were happy, would they be so thoughtless and cruel as to nearly run down an old man and his student?" The younger man had no answer, for he was deep in thought. In a moment when he hadn't expected grace or goodness, both were there. And so, in silence, the two continued their journey down the dusty road.
I know many people had lots of thoughts and feelings after the election this week, and also after the news of the decision from the Sixth Circuit to uphold inequality in Ohio and our neighboring states. And so I chose these wisdom words from a colleague who composed them on the eve of the election. They're modeled a passage from, it's called The Work of Citizenship by Reverend Aaron Payson. When the last campaign ad has aired, when polling stations are closed and the count has been certified, when pundits and politicians have turned in for the night, and pollsters and political operatives are turning their attention to the next big race, the work of citizenship remains: to care more for the marginalized than for the profit margin, to be mindful that quality education is less expensive than mass incarceration, to insist that military intervention is a last resort, not the preemptive prerogative of the powerful. In short, to know that our true wealth is the welfare of all beings and this planet we call home. I invite you, as we prepare for prayer, to Prepare to sing a response to the prayer, which is in your teal hymnal. If you don't know the words, it's number 1031. So I'd like to invite you to open to that page. And then just set your open hymnal down. As the prayer ends, we'll begin singing together. Gracious Spirit, moving through each and through all. We try so hard to be good, to do the right thing, to sow seeds of kindness, to create justice in this world, to be loving with ourselves and one another. This morning we confess that we are limited. We don't always succeed. Our lives are not always aligned with our values. And so we pray this morning to remember your loom is love, to bow before the mystery of blessings. Blessings we didn't earn and sometimes didn't even imagine to ask. Help us tune our hearts to your love. When I was in my mid-20s, I decided that one of the things that I really wanted to do in this life was experience the world outside of the United States. So I saved and I planned and I saved some more for a 3-month adventure in South America. My traveling companion and I decided that we would spend the first month or so in Quito, in Ecuador, working on our Spanish. And so we arrived in Quito and our guidebooks advised us that we should arrange our Spanish tutoring when we got there, because many of the organizations that offer this, the businesses that offer this, kind of go in and out of business, and we could go check it out in person and see what we were getting into. So that's what we did after we arrived and got acclimated. We started checking out Spanish tutoring companies. And we knew that we needed a place that could offer differing levels of instruction, as I had studied Spanish for many years, but my traveling companion was completely new to the language. So we checked out a few places and settled on one that we thought would be good, and we signed up for a month of lessons. And so we began. The very first day that we went, we were assigned to our tutors, and my friend was assigned a young college student. The owner of the business announced that he was going to tutor me himself. And it became quickly apparent to me that my tutoring was going to be delivered with a hefty dose of sexual harassment. And having been sexually harassed by my boss when I was a high school student for 2 years and didn't know what to do or how to deal with that situation, I decided I wasn't going through that again. And so though we knew that that meant we were going to lose all of the money that we had paid for this month of lessons, we decided shortly after we began to quit. So the next morning after we quit, we were in our little apartment trying to think about what we were going to do next, and we heard a knock on the door. We opened it, surprised to discover standing there before us were two young women tutors from the tutoring center. And they told us that their boss had been sexually harassing them too, and they decided to follow our lead and quit. But before they did, they snuck into his desk, found our paperwork to get our address, and here they were to tell us that they were both students at the university studying to become travel agents, and they wanted to work on their English. So how would we feel about trading English lessons with them for Spanish lessons for the next month? We ended up getting to know these people very well. They were wonderful young women. They invited us to their homes. We met their families. They shared their food with us, their music. They took us to their favorite places around the city. We traded lessons and we became friends. It turned out that signing up for tutoring lessons at a place run by a creep was grace in disguise. Now, some people might say it turned out that way for a reason, because everything happens for a reason. And I've shared with you before that that particular theology doesn't resonate with me. Sometimes things happen because of our choices, and we can clearly trace the line. This turned out this way because of that decision and that decision and that decision. But sometimes bad things happen in our life for no reason. No reason is justifiable. We can't help but ask why. Why did this happen? Why? What did we do? Why me? Why now? And how I feel about it is that there are times when the only answer to that question that has any integrity is there is no good reason. It shouldn't have happened that way. I'm sorry that you're suffering. Sometimes bad things happen in our life for no good reason. But even when that happens, grace can still follow. It doesn't always turn out that way, but sometimes it does. Sometimes grace comes through the disguise of trouble in our lives. Anne Lamott describes this well in her book, Traveling Mercy. These are her words. Grace is the force that infuses our lives and keeps letting us off the hook. It's unearned love, the love that goes before and greets us on the way. It's the help you receive when you have no bright ideas left, when you're empty and desperate and have discovered that your best thinking and most charming charm have failed you. Grace is the light or the breeze that takes you from that isolated place and puts you with others who are as startled and embarrassed and eventually as grateful as you are to be there. I do not at all understand the mystery of grace, only that it meets us where we are, but doesn't leave us where we found us. What this says to me is that grace can be a part of our deliverance when trouble comes. When life feels broken, grace can be part of what helps us mend. And when that happens, the gift of grace that can be so beautiful that we end up feeling grateful and blessed, even though we have recently been visited by trouble. There's an ancient Japanese art form called kintsugi or kintsukori. The word literally means golden joinery or golden repair. It evolved in the late 15th century after the Japanese ruler Yoshimasa sent a damaged Chinese tea bowl back to China to be repaired. When the bowl came back to him, his beautiful bowl, he was dismayed to see that ugly repair scar running through it. And so he commissioned his artisans to find a more attractive way to mend pottery. The art that they developed involves mixing a lacquer resin with gold, or applying the resin and then dusting it with gold, silver, or platinum. Pottery that has been repaired in this way is astonishingly beautiful. Where those cracks were, there are glimmering lines of gold. It seems to me an elegant metaphor for grace. Life can break us, but grace can help us mend. The thing about grace is when it comes, it doesn't usually come with instructions or a formal introduction. It would be nice if it worked that way. It would be nice if in the midst of our worry or busyness or sorrow, we could get a little advance warning. Dear friend, grace is on the way. Pay attention. There's a blessing for you coming. We'd be a lot less likely to miss it if we could get a little heads up. Too bad it doesn't work that way. Instead, grace comes at unexpected times and unexpected ways, and even sometimes in disguise. Grace can come in the form of a brown paper bag held together with duct tape and staples. And grace can come in the form of those people in your life who, if you're honest, you have to admit kind of get on your nerves. There are people in your life that you really can't avoid or feel that you shouldn't, but whom you'd rather not spend too much time with. You have to sit next to them when the extended family gets together for dinner, or you have to work with them when you're assigned to collaborate on a project at your job, or find out that you're serving with them on a committee here at church. Learning to be patient and kind with people who you don't really click with is a kind of endurance training for the ways of grace. By choosing to show up and stay open to these relationships, we're practicing being open to grace from unexpected people and unexpected places. It's good training for life. Not only that, the skills that we learn by connecting across difference strengthen our capacity to collaborate as agents of grace with a greater variety of people and in a greater variety of situations. More on that next week. But for now, I want to say that the experience of being blessed by grace can happen at unexpected times, and it's hard to be open. It's harder to be open to grace than it is to conspire with grace. Maybe that's one of the reasons that it isn't always easy to pay attention to grace in our midst. We want to perceive ourselves as capable and strong and skillful, and often we are capable and strong and skillful. At other times, we're weary and confused and stumbling and utterly dependent on the help of others to see us through. A member of the congregation wrote to me an email this week with some thoughts about grace. She was remembering a couple of lines from her favorite poem, Death of a Hired Man. Home is the place where, when you have to go there, they have to take you in. I should have called it something you shouldn't somehow haven't to deserve. To her, this is the essence of grace. The lines speak of the grace of blessings received and blessings bestowed. She notes that Unitarian Universalists are really big on helping, on bestowing blessings, but not so big on being helped. Learning to ask for and accept help gracefully is another way that we can practice. Sometimes we're the ones opening the door to blessing for someone else to walk through, and sometimes we're the one needing that welcome. Sometimes we are the artisans lovingly, skillfully mending the broken pot with precious gold, and sometimes we are the ones who are broken. Grace is the gift of home and welcome. Grace is the blessing of repair. Grace is the embrace of love. Grace is a gift freely given, not because we have earned it, but simply because life is filled with blessing. So may we notice and lift our hearts in thanks. Amen. This morning, I am still glowing with the beauty of the event our congregation hosted last night, not just because of the money we raised, which is important, but especially because all of the ways that people showed up to help one another, to create a wonderful event, to bless this community. That happens again and again and again around here. People share their time and their talents and their treasure, and we take this offering every week as a symbol and a reminder of the beauty of this gift. If you are our guest this morning, there's a candle for you in the basket. We're glad that you're with us. The offering will now be gratefully received. I send you this morning with these words from Sarah Moores Campbell. We receive fragments of holiness, glimpses of eternity, brief moments of insight. Let us gather them up for the precious gifts that they are, and renewed by their grace, move boldly into the unknown. Go in peace.